are living in an artificially induced state of consciousness that resembles sleep. The poor and the underclass are growing. Racial justice and human rights are non-existent. We have been lulled into a trance. They have made us indifferent to ourselves, to others. We are focused only on our own gain. That is their primary method of survival. Keep us asleep, keep us selfish, keep us sedated.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Here's your host, Michael Storm.
Welcome to Toward Anarchy. I am Michael Storm. Thank you so much for joining me. As always, it's my pleasure to be here every week live worldwide across the Republic Broadcasting Network. Thanks to you, and thank you for taking the time to tune in and find out and get yourself informed and to have a little bit of fun sometimes, because we do try to do that. Go to towardanarchy.com to follow along. As always, in my world, I'm live. It is July 16th, so if it's not right up there, right in front of your face when you get to towardanarchy.com, just click on the episodes button and look for July 16th. It's the year of our Lord, 2023. And you'll see all the information that I plan to share with you today, or at least what I could put down on one little digital piece of paper and try to get across to you. The rest of it, you got to kind of tune in, pay a little bit of attention, listen in on the conversation. That's why we invite you in here to listen in on these conversations. Maybe you catch a little something. Maybe you get something out of it. If not, we're going to do it anyway. But that's just the way it works. July 16th there at towardanarchy.com, as always, you'll see some links and some quote and some meme stuff that you can share around with your buddies on the social media. And there's information about my guest today as well. Comedian and writer Brian McWilliams is going to chat with me here in just a minute. He's already on the phone waiting away, and we will jump right into the conversation here in just a second. But I want to tell you who he is and kind of point you to some more information. So if you like what you hear today during the conversation, you can follow up. You can find and follow Brian and his podcasts and the things that they do at the Lions of Liberty Network there at the links on the Lions of Liberty website at lionsofliberty.com. And then, of course, you can find them all over Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Lions of Liberty. Brian himself, his concern for liberty, this is sort of kind of a quote. It popped during the 2008 Dr. Paul presidential campaign, and he was exposed, I love this, to troubling initiatives our government embraces and how they infringe on the tenets of America and what it was founded on. And I guess that sent him, like a lot of us, down a path of finding truth and looking for information and trying to find some solutions to the political and social problems that we have without maybe necessarily forcing them on people, with that libertarian, voluntarist, anarchist perspective of things. And so I thought it would be fantastic to have a conversation with Brian, and so he joins us today. Brian, thank you so much for taking the time to come on and chat with me. And I just have this serious question. It may not seem like it, but it really is a serious question. How can you be a libertarian-minded, an individual-minded person, and actually and still be able to stand up and sort of do comedy? Because government is evil. That's a punchline. Cops are bad. That's a punchline. Lawyers are bad. That's a punchline. You get what I'm getting at there?
Yeah, for sure. Well, you know, at the end of the day, I think that comedy, if it's done properly, if it's done accurately, should be one of the most libertarian things out there, right? Because libertarianism is meritocracy. The market is meritocracy. And comedy, despite what it's trending towards now, really comes around to that at its core. You know, you can make people laugh, whether or not they agree with what you're saying or not. Sometimes cutting to that truth in a way that they don't see coming just evokes a natural response of people, and that's that gut laughter. So really, you know, libertarianism and comedy go hand in hand because you are tying into a gut truth And people, no matter how much brainwashed they might be, will recognize that truth when it hits them hard right in the face. And that's what you can do with a great punchline.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I'm sure you get this all the time. You hear that sort of George Carlin or someone like that has been a major influence on libertarian thinkers and people that run in our sort of circles, I guess. I think it's absolutely true. I think you're right. It blows my mind when I hear a comedian talk about things in that very libertarian, very marketplace ideals, whatever it is that they're joking about at the time. But then to have them sort of be an entirely different person. Jim Jeffries is kind of, it seems to me to be an actual stand-up that is like that. They get up on stage and they talk about individualism and they poke fun at society and all of the things that we would do as libertarians when they carry over into politics and political thought. And then they get off the stage and they're slightly, if not greatly different person when it comes to their political stance, and they're sort of almost in the face of that libertarianism that they talk about on stage.
It is mind-boggling in many ways to me how many comedians do tend to fall hard on the left, and you do. I mean, Jim Jeffries is a great example. You nailed it. I mean, I think it's something where a lot of times comedians will separate, and a lot of comedians, by the way, will come off on stage and they'll be these dynamic people outgoing and funny and joking, and then you find out that they're clinically depressed. So many comedians have deep, deep issues, and comedy is essentially their therapy. And I think there's something to that, by the way, when we talk about these people that are deeply left, because guess what? Most people that are deeply left are also deeply depressed most of the time. So it kind of goes into what I was saying, because you think about it. These different personas. He's doing a different persona on stage where probably his more frank thoughts are being displayed, are coming out. But then when he gets off stage, he goes back in this worldview, this leftist place of being depressed, of being convinced that everything should be better, that what we're doing, you know, has to be government oversight. We have to lean into controlling people's lives. So the truth that came out on stage to him is lost and really is almost a split personality. And when you think about it, the way I like to look at it, I guess to give myself some sanity, is that the truth that comes out on stage is the therapy of getting out there, saying the things that you're not allowed to say to yourself, even to admit to yourself in your own mind in private, lest you cross that Rubicon of am I now one of those evil right-wingers that I'm told are destroying the world, or am I a libertarian, you know, nut job that I'm told will bring down everything society has worked for? Those thoughts to many people on the left are so, they're just the antithesis of everything they've always been brought up to be, where the only place for these truths to come out would be on stage for somebody like Jim Jeffries, because to think otherwise in his real, quote-unquote, real-life persona would be to go against everything his ego has been built up to be, his social profile, his friend group. You know, he doesn't risk being cast out by making a joke about it on stage that hits at a truth, whereas he would be cast out of his circle should he dare to utter that offstage.
Yeah, that's absolutely right. And it's funny you say that, because I'm not a, you know, I'm 50 years old. I'm a beyond the sitting and watching the people on YouTube play video games and chat and stuff, but I'm not above it. And I do it, so I'm aware of it, and I'm aware that it happens, and I'm good for an episode of Fresh and Fit any day. I see this interesting change in the way that, of course, that we're talking to people through podcasts and through shows like this and things that you guys do on the Lions of Liberty Network and all across the place. But it's funny to watch, because I'm over at my daughter's house, and of course she's younger, and inside that sort of generation where they do spend a little bit of time watching these so-called influencers, and they know who these people are, and you know, I catch one through the social media and things like that every once in a while, but I don't watch them, and I don't really know who they are. But there's this big There's always a big to-do, but there's one in particular, of one of these influencers, a female who's been accused of grooming young boys, apparently. I don't know. There's always a story, right? And there's this inappropriate nature about the whole thing, but then there's this, I'm watching this thing, and she's talking about this, and she's giving this horrible apology where she's playing a ukulele and singing this song.
I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
You do? Okay, you're familiar. All right, fair enough. I truly don't know who these people are, but I know enough about what's going on. So I can't name them, but I can tell you what's happening with them. And I just, I saw this clip where she's talking to Stephen Colbert. And she's talking about how she's doing exactly that. She's living in these personas when she's presenting herself, and then she's crawling back into this closed off, sort of depressed, obviously somebody with some, you know, some issues.
Absolutely. Well, I think that that's the nature of social media as a whole. And, you know, this is kind of going off on a different track, but I think that so much of what we do see is, and especially problems when we talk about, you know, the actions of mass shootings, I think that a lot of that can be traced back to, you know, SSRIs and also social media use, because you think about the isolation and you think about the different portrayals of personas online versus offline, how people now do not interact in the same way as they used to, that so many people are spending times on their phones, the denial of parental influence on lives as it used to be. I mean, I've got two young daughters. One is 3.5, one is 9 months, and I have to check myself because, you know, I'm on my phone. We're on our phone, you know, checking Twitter, tweeting out, you know, quips and interesting tidbits on liberty or jokes or whatever it might be. And then you look for the response, and I have to remind myself to not do that because my daughters are in the room. They're young. They need my attention. They need my tutelage. They need this basic interaction on a human level. And I was thinking about how much of this generation coming up that grew up with millennial parents or even Gen Z parents, and how they now, because of the amount of attention paid to the phone, have been denied, I mean, how much human interaction? 10%?
Well, it must be increasing.
Generations? You have to wonder.
Yeah, I think actually the evidence is probably there. If you really go, if you're not looking for it, you get to sit and wonder. But I think if you go look for the evidence, I think that it's there. And you're right. What happens is that the social media is a secondary expression of these things that they're already feeling and already having problems with, and it's compounding on itself. You know what short generations that we've had in that time period. It's funny that we went in that direction with the conversation, because one of the links that I shared today across the show page there is this link. It's just talking about a CDC report that everybody ignores and the important parts of it. And we're talking about this sort of teenage mental health crisis and how that we've gotten it wrong. And there's so much attention on social media, but social media is just that place where it's being expressed and where it's actually being condensed and blown up. And it, just as you were saying, they're finding depression and loneliness doesn't get any better when your face is stuck in a phone and you're out there interacting with the negativity that comes across through the social media so often, even though there's so much good stuff there. But what they're saying is that they've done these surveys and they've done these studies and that they've been doing them for a long time, and that they always point to, and they have for years, pointed to the home life and what's going on in the home. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just one of those, you know, and this, I guess, started, I mean, it didn't start always with the internet. I think people as a whole got away from, I mean, you can even go back to people, you know, two parents going to work all the time and how that's been necessitated now. And obviously, you know, government has helped to push that along, obviously build up the tax base, and with inflation, you know, people have to go to work. But it started with not having your parenting done at home. It started with an abdication of much of that responsibility and giving that away to the various services. But without a doubt, the social media has amplified it beyond what we could have ever thought of.
Well, it's kind of a lie the social media is kind of a lie. The idea of it is that you get out and you be social and that you learn some new things and you meet some new people. But what it really turns down to, especially for people who can't do that, if you can't do that in normal life, you can't really do that in a digital life. You certainly can't do it well in a digital life if you can't do it in your normal life. So if you're prone already to avoiding the kids at school or the people at work or whoever it is and being at home alone, it's not going to help you to go onto the internet, because what you're going to do is you're going to find more depressed people just like you doing the same thing.
Right. What do you think about this? And I've used this example before in my own show, and again, talking about some of the mass shooting stuff and talking about isolation. Mm. You know, think about your favorite 80s comedy. And you've always had, you know, your high school comedy, you had the jocks and the nerds and the different groups, right? So the point being, there wasn't the isolation. Even if you were a nerd in school, even if you were being bullied in person in school, you had a cadre of friends around. You probably still had your nerd friends, you know, or if you were a drama kid, you had your drama friends. So you still had somebody that you owed allegiance to, that had your back, that you treated as an equal, that you felt responsible to and wanted to live up to their expectations. And I think about that and a lot of the actions taken from, you know, from various, either be it suicide, be it lashing out with violence, you know, when you don't have anybody that you really feel accountable to, that can lead to dire outcomes. And as you said, finding people online that are not going to be supportive in the same way and probably enhance your tendencies that are going the other way, that are the suicidal, that are the violent tendencies. Whereas when you think about when you have a friend group, if you went out and shot up a school or if you end up killing yourself, I mean, I used to think about this, not that I ever had suicidal thoughts, but I legitimately thought, right, if I killed myself, how would my parents feel? How would my friends feel? To leave them alone knowing that I killed myself, I could never do that to them. But the isolation now of who are you leaving behind? A bunch of emojis? You know, who gives a damn?
Well, and we've turned
it, a huge component.
Yeah, no question about it. And unfortunately, we've turned normal questions of our reality and what ifs into dangerous areas of talk. You know, I hear these a commercial on the radio or something like that, and it'll mention you talk to your children about suicide. Do this, and my only thought is because they say it's going to be the thing that solves their problem, that it may save them from committing suicide, and the fact is that it's quite as likely to help them along their way, especially if you speak to them, if you don't use the right language to speak to them, you don't use the right timing and the proper way to, I hate to say proper because everybody's different, but there's some basic ways that you have to be able to talk to people and try to reach people. And if you do that and you fail to do that, all you've done at that point is reinforced this individual's.
Well, what I do to my kids, you know, I haven't had the suicide talk yet, but when I do, I'm just going to tell them, look, whatever you do, don't use a handgun, because I don't want you inflating those stats to give the anti-gun nuts anything else to work with.
Yeah, right. No more ammunition for this.
I'd say there's rope in the garage, honey, okay?
And plus, we don't want to have to clean it up. It's funny that there's a lot of things. I watch this. I have four children. And they range in age from 30s to 20s to teens to early teens, preteen. And I've never had to have conversations like that with them. But you know why? Because I had every other conversation with them all the time.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a really, really strong point. Yeah.
It's funny because it is such a big thing, the phones and stuff. And I just have to, I hear people talk about it all the time, and they get into conflict with their children over it. And they have these arguments, and their friends get to do this, and their mom, friend's mom, they say, oh, come on, let's not go down that road. Let's talk about us. Let's talk about you and I. You as the child, are you a good child? Are you doing well in your studies? Are you being the person that I expect you to be? Then do what the hell you want to do. Just be a good person. I've always given my kids that you know, keep your hands off other people and their stuff. And what is it, the Jordan Peterson thing that I like this, that I heard this not too long ago. It said, don't do anything to make me hate you.
Yeah, I think that, you know, I think that just to go back to your earlier point about talking to your kids about everything else and checking in with them, and I think also being, you know, so often I think that most parents now are scared to be hated by their children and scared be disliked by their children, which, you know, for my kids, again, they're very young. But even now, there is a very distinct line where, look, I don't really care if you are going to be upset. I don't care if you're not going to like me, but you need to respect me. But you know that I love you through it because I'll explain why I'm doing something, right? I want you to know why I'm doing it, even my 3.5-year-old, so she gets why I'm doing it. But I'm there, and I want her to know I'm there for you. I'm there because I care for you, and I want you to interact with me. Because the interaction of talking to your kids about anything and everything, as you mentioned, is also going to give you so much insight into their mental state. And I think that so many parents just have no clue what their children are doing, what their mental state is, because they're checked out so much. And yeah, go ahead.
I don't want to blame it on, I don't want anybody to think that we're blaming it on parents, where they have as much fault as they do, but there are so many other things, there are so many other distractions, and it does trace back so much. But that's why when they're looking at it and they're pointing at the screens and they're saying social media is to blame, I say, no, not as much as you might like it to be. Yeah, it's a problem, and it's a big problem, but it's a problem way over here past a whole bunch of other problems, past a whole bunch of other things where you could have said, wait a minute, maybe I need to approach this a little bit differently, and we wouldn't be at this place right now. It's just putting the cart before the horse. There's the phrase.
Yeah, I would agree. And you know, there is a lot of obvious benefit to social medias as well. You know, we're focusing on the negative. Obviously, there's a lot of positives, and especially with the generations coming up. You know, getting back to the concept of the show here, you know, Toward Anarchy. I will say that I've been shocked talking to a lot of younger generation kids, some of the people that are college age now, some that my older friends have that are leaving the nest. They have a shocking predilection now to be more skeptical of authority, of mainstream media, of you know, some of these narratives that are being passed along and treated as gospel. I mean, I remember one interaction. I have two very liberal parental friends that have a daughter who is just now 18. But when Kamala Harris and Biden were running, her parents were all, you know, chanting Kamala, Kamala. And I see her daughter, you know, roll her eyes. I go, "Oh, you don't like Kamala?" Because I don't like her. And she goes, "No, I don't like her. I hate her. She's, you know, she's somebody that undermines parenting. She kept people in prison. She kept, you know," she listed off these things like a 17 or 16 and a half year old at the time. How does she know this? Well, social media. Yeah. You know, it's the fact that the social media has really undercut the power to shape a narrative from the mainstream media, even to these kids, where they don't believe any of it. And that's a wonderful thing. So, you know, there's a lot of benefit, I guess, to the next generation too, but we have to get through, and as you said, we have to figure out the core causes to some of the negative ills that are amplified on it so that we can accentuate positive.
Or stop ignoring them. Exactly. Because I think a lot of the reason that they get ignored is because these things will benefit the ability of controllers to, they use whatever narrative that they've come up with. This CDC report that I was talking about earlier, one of the things that I have a problem with this is it's all wonderful information, and it does point to the real problems and it talks about them, but that right there in and of itself is just more ammunition for the socialist state to try to take control over children and continue us on the same path that got us here in the first place.
Yeah, well, it's interesting to see how many negative articles still continue to come out. You know, we talk about trying to get these kids all indoctrinated into the school systems, the rampant anti-homeschooling articles, and I can't remember exactly the name of the woman, but there was a woman who was at Harvard, and she also was a writer, I think it was like for the New York Times, but just anti-homeschooling crusades. You see that now tied into everything that went on with COVID and the teachers' unions, and obviously their refusal to go back to work and refusal to teach, to a fresh round of strikes that happened here. I live in Los Angeles. I know, shocking, an anarchist libertarian can stand it here, but that's where I'm at. But they did their second strike, and it was like 5 years, fresh off of COVID, and yet they will tell you that your children are in danger and that homeschoolers are beyond evil and that they're, you know, going to ruin their children's lives, and they're teaching conspiracy theory. And you go, we just lived through a conspiracy theory. We just lived through rampant control of information flow. to the point where you were denying basic medical facts to people. We're in an information warfare right now where the FBI is censoring Americans' posts from the Ukraine, and yet we're being taught that we still have to trust the government to, you know, to shepherd our children through and give them the basic facts of the world around us. In the meantime, it's being torn down and attacked on all fronts, at all fronts, if you don't agree with this unionist, statist narrative. I mean, it's amazing to see, but I still think, and I'm curious to hear if you agree with me, I still think that COVID did wake up far more people than it converted to be more government stooges. And I think that you're going to see a generational shift away from status control and far more towards something that we would view as, you know, if not full anarchy, at least towards a more free state, a more autonomous operation, especially when you consider people's health changes, their schooling changes, et cetera.
Yeah, no, I do, and I hope for it. That's what it is. I've talked about it. I talked about it all during COVID and all through it. I love the fact that I was here doing this show during COVID, because I'm on the record. I'm out there being right the whole time about how this thing was going to play out. And I hope I'm right about this too. I'm hope that it does, because what I'm seeing is, and I hope that it switches as we continue to find foundational places for people to go and find other ideas and ways to get information as that continues to grow and we continue to fight back against the system trying to consolidate those places. I hope that's the way it happens. But what I'm worried about is that we have something of beginnings of a lost generation of people who don't have anything that they can turn to because they don't understand anarchy or voluntarism. They haven't experienced a libertarian in their life to maybe help them guide this. So what they have is just a complete refusal to participate in this broken system, but they also have no other way to turn and think about how to fix it, how to do things for themselves.
Well, I think that's something that, I mean, I know that's something that I'm focusing on more with my show. You know, I'm working on a book also, and the concept of freedom futurism. Now, the question is, and that's, of course, focusing on a combination of solutions. You know, here's how, within anarchy or within libertarianism, how you would actually build out a fresh society, a fresh way of accomplishing these means. You know, the old question of who would build the roads, et cetera, that's an easy one. But looking more towards a combination of not only a solution, but also I think what people are missing, and so many people now are craving, essentially, religion. You know, we've had a war on religion, and I am not a religious person. I'll tell you that frankly. I was raised Catholic at 14, decided it's not for me. I didn't believe in God and left it. But the absence of religion does lead people to go down other paths. Climate is a religion. We know that. Progressivism is a religion. And as atheism has picked up, you see these people going in divergent paths that give them something to believe in, to rally around, and to give their life meaning as far as what they're fighting for. And I think that libertarianism and anarchism is missing that aspect. We don't have something that we really can give people where they say, what is this almost fantastical future that is so beautiful, that is so undeniably better than what we have, that I'm going to believe in it, even if there's failures along the way, I'm going to say, well, we just didn't do it properly. You know, the old socialism thing.
Yes.
And I think that that's something that people need to think about more within our community, is what we can deliver that, while it might not be completely accurate, we need to start thinking a little bit more fantastically, in the science fiction realm, if you will, and give people something that they can really latch onto. Instead of saying, "Look, we're going to take these things away because they shouldn't have existed to begin with, the welfare state. You know, we're going to take away the school system. We're going to close these things down." Well, I agree with that. All that does is scare people,
right? And yeah, that's it. It does scare them because they just don't. What do you mean you're going to take? Well, what do I do then? Because let's face it, most people are not capable of probably educating their at least not at this point of educating their children and providing them with a lot of it. Yes, but so many, so not so. We got to go into a break here. We're talking with Brian McWilliams. Go to towardanarchy.com. Look for July 16th if you want to follow along. We'll be right back on Toward Anarchy.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Have you been looking for a trusted long-term storable food company? We have a solution for you. Simply Clean Foods is dedicated to providing the best quality food you can buy next to fresh from a farmer's market. Our line of resealable fruits, vegetables, and meats are suitable for everyday use, and you won't have to worry about throwing away valuable groceries ever again. Our food is completely GMO-free, and our stringent quality controls, plus testing for heavy metals, makes us unique in the storable foods market. Simply Clean Foods' primary focus is to bring clean food to people all around the world and change the way we look at freeze-dried food in our daily cooking. When you purchase from Simply Clean Foods, not only will you be receiving high-quality food, but you will also be supporting veterans in need across the country and those who are affected by natural disasters.
Go to republicbroadcasting.org and click on long-term food storage in the rotating sponsors banners to support RBN.
Simply Clean Foods. Do it today.
My name is Don Wiskin, and at 42 years old, I suffered a massive heart attack, lost 35% of my heart to damaged tissue, and was supposed to spend the rest of my life on disability. What did I do? I took Extendivite, a garlic and cayenne mix of seven herbs which rebuilt my heart and gave me back my life. For over 17 years now, I have made this formula available to you so you don't have to suffer the same thing I did. Clean your blocked arteries and strengthen your heart and boost your natural immune system. I'm 60 years old now and I still work every day. To get your Extendivite, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a 2-month supply of either capsules or liquid.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
You're listening to Toward Anarchy with Michael Storm.
I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo in so much space. And when you're out there without care, yeah, I was out of.
Please, please do me a huge favor, and it's not even one of those entirely selfish ones. Support the network, republicbroadcasting.org. If you can, real simple, just click on the donate button right over there, put an amount in there, and voila, done. Or do that win-win thing and hit shoprbn.com and support all of the advertisers and buy their products and their services at shoprbn.com. Boy, I am chewing things up today. Sometimes that happens. Get a little drink, wash it all down, try it all again. Shoprbn.com and you know, it makes it possible for me. Maybe you don't like this show. It's just one of many, many shows across Republic Broadcasting Network that you can and probably do listen to. And so, it's not a selfish thing. I'm not doing it because I benefit from it. I'm doing it because we all benefit from it. It's a win-win situation for all of us when the ideas, the topics, the conversations can be had, and they can be had in a nice, safe space like that is provided here by Republic Broadcasting. And so, you know, support the network. That's what I please ask you to do. And you can follow along at Toward Anarchy anywhere you know, wherever. I haven't joined Threads yet, and I saw some graphic the other day, and Threads is the, you know, Zuckerberg answer to Twitter, I guess. I guess trying to build a leftist Twitter. They haven't been able to do that yet. And I saw this graph where there was this huge spike in the number of people who signed up initially, and then it just fell way, way off. So we'll see if they manage to make a dent in that particular conversation at all. But you can find the show just about anywhere at Toward Anarchy, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, places like that. And subscribe to the newsletter at towardanarchy.com. And I just send one out every once in a while, let you know about shows, who's coming up, who's been on, maybe convince you to, you know, maybe just tune in, maybe try to find a new perspective. And that's all, you know, Brian and I were talking here. We're talking about solutions. And I think that's a huge thing in trying to find a place for the libertarians and the anarchists and the voluntarists and all of us to maybe stop doing a little less finger pointing. We all love to sit here and talk about Operation Paperclip, or some people, you know, point to 9/11 and connections there, or they pick these meta events. Maybe it's the Kennedy assassination for some of the older people. There's always something. Go back to 1913. Let's talk about the Federal Reserve. There's always a place, a point in time, some meta event that they can sort of point to and they harp on, and it's great. It's wonderful. It serves its purpose, but where do we go from here? Yeah, end the Fed. That's the end of the sentence. What do we do after the Fed? Because most people don't necessarily understand that. You and I get it. We can have that conversation, but we need to have it in such a way that other people are getting the information out of it, too. Is that you think that is something that we're lacking in focus there, Brian?
Absolutely. It's, you know, and the Fed, I kind of harped on that myself, and that
we all do.
It's a great, you know, it's a great quote. It's a great slogan. It should be ended. But again, what's going to replace it? You know, you have to. And it's also something where people want to find out. People, I think, are naturally builders. Many of us are builders, especially the male audience. Right. And not to take anything away from females, but men tend to lean into being that conceptual build solutions type of people. Mm-hmm. And if you give people something that they can look to and say, okay, how can I solve a problem in an issue? Like I had tweeted out, hey, you know, why don't we have flying cars? Ask a libertarian, right? Because making a question like that, it leans into, number one, a trope that everybody always asks, right? When we talk about any of these dumb inventions out there that come out and you go, well, why, we've got this, but why don't we have flying cars? You know, people going right. through the TSA, why don't we have flying cars? Why do we have to deal with this? Okay, well, let's lean into that. Let's talk about regulation. Let's talk about competition. Let's talk about government stifling of innovation and supporting the airlines that exist. Let's talk about, you know, why we don't have hydrogen fuel cells available to us and how the government has, you know, attacked and destroyed electric cars back in the day. How the government had attacked them in Los Angeles and ripped out the train lines and replaced them with, you know, freeways because of the auto industry. Let's talk about the reasons that these solutions don't exist, and then I'll show you exactly how we can get there. And to your point about tying it into, I mean, end the Fed's one thing, I guess, you know, to separate that from conspiracy theory. But, yeah, we do point to the evils of government and the evils of conspiracy. And, man, there's a lot of them.
A lot.
Yeah. But the odds of the average person, and I know this from, you know, my career is actually public relations. So dealing with what motivates people in the ways which communicate people and how, and basically human trends, how humans actually interact with the world around them and what leads them to make purchasing decisions. Most people are not going to read the diatribe that, you know, that we talk about on, you know, Operation Paperclip. They're not going to go down that rabbit hole. And in fact, they're probably more likely to see something like that, mock it, and move along, and it's going to further insinuate their held stereotype about libertarians, where if we want to buck the trend, if we want to appeal to these people in a new way, let's come at them in a new way, which is inspirational, aspirational, entrepreneurial, and technologically advanced, because libertarians should have a lockdown not only on comedy, as I said earlier, but on being the party, or anarchists being the party of innovation. And that's why Elon Musk getting on board with a lot of what we're doing, and even Jack Dorsey tweeting out excerpts from Rothbard, that's exciting, because that's what we need to be leaning into, is the party of possibility, the philosophy of possibility, not the philosophy of a bunch of, you know, half-autistic weirdos that want you to read a conspiracy theory that happened in 1964.
Yeah, well, and that's where we get to the Libertarian Party as a force, then, isn't it? Because that's it seems obvious to me that it's an extremely ineffective tool at this point within the system, not just having been in the same position as you jumped on the Dr. Paul campaign and were involved in that and paid attention and kept your eyes open in 2008,
I went door to door for Ron Paul here in Los Angeles, and it was unpleasant experience.
Oh, I bet it was. Yeah, yeah.
Although I'll say the most unpleasant thing, in truth, it was shocking how many people I'd knock on their doors, and they actually, here's what the most aggravating thing was, a lot of people had heard of him, and a lot of people liked him. But what they said was, well, I love him, but I'm not going to vote for him because he's not going to win. And I'm like, well, this is a catch-22 then. If you're not going to vote for him, you know, maybe if you voted for him, he'd win, but nobody would.
Yeah. No, I experienced the same thing in 2012 when he ran again, I didn't do any door-to-door knocking. I just went and showed up at my district meeting for the Republicans, and there was like seven of us in the room, and we all said, yeah, Dr. Paul, sure, why not? And then I went and stood out in front of the convention in a orange jumpsuit that said FEMA on the back of it and shackles with a hood over my head and said who I wouldn't vote for. I just was experiencing the system and trying to have a little bit of fun and trying to be in it and do what Dr. Paul was most successful at in his years in Congress there, which was just getting out the general message of individual liberty and free markets. And that was the best that we could hope for. And obviously it worked pretty well, because there's a whole bunch of us anarchists, libertarians, voluntarists running around saying, yeah, Dr. Paul's a major reason why I am who I am today. And I think we were talking earlier about being on that path and about finding the outlets there that people can that will fill that gap for them. They'll fill that void for them when they don't get the answer, when all they do is they see the hype coming across the social media or through the news about some idea or another, and they don't really understand it, and maybe don't have the capacity or the will to make themselves go out there and understand it more. And we need to find, I think that this is why, that's why I do what I do. It sounds like it's why you do what you do in terms of talking to people and having the conversations like these. It's an exercise in being who you are and showing that your life is the way it is because you've adopted a particular ideology that makes it easier for you to get through life, even in the face of the manipulations of our money and our markets and our politics and our social system.
I think there is a lot of, you know, having the personality that adopts what we believe in, and instead, you know, sticking to a moral principle, and libertarianism and anarchism, really, I think, beyond any of the other political philosophies, do give you a very confident sense that what you're doing is the right thing, but also from a foundational perspective, more than other philosophies, you're very comfortable in that you can answer questions that come your way without any uncomfortableness of shifting it. You know, progressivism, conservatism, they both break down under some scrutiny and very simple questions. But libertarianism always has answers for it. And I do think that makes for a happier person, a happier life, and especially when it comes to communicating. And I think you know, I my mind went to this because we're talking about, you know, why we are the way we are and why we do the things we do. I think also in that, getting back to having children, I can't ever abandon this philosophy now, knowing right. that I've got two kids that are depending on me, seeing the way in which the world is unfolding, where you were right during COVID, I was right during COVID. We've been warning people about how the government is going to continuously grow, take control, you know, undermine what we're doing, and how the interests of the government are never our interests. And you see what's happened over the past few years and how it's accelerated and expanded, and it's frankly terrifying. And it's given me a lot of urgency in, and again, this is why it's leading me to try to change the way people are communicating. And you mentioned the LP. I actually have a call. I think I'm going to be doing a call with them Wednesday because Angela McCardle is a friend of mine, the chair, to help to try to work with their communications team to change the narrative and how we develop our messaging. So nice. That's something I'm tangibly trying to do because there is an urgency that didn't quite exist in the same way that has been put on us over the last few years. And it's continuing to play out in that way with CBDCs, with the spying apparatus, with what just happened in France, where police can turn on your microphone and your phone on your camera without your knowledge. I mean, the accelerating technological aspects of government and how they can control and influence and track your life are absolutely beyond dystopian 1984 future. And it's really making things apparent that we need to stop it now. We have to find a way to reach people now. Otherwise, we were not going to be facing a very promising future.
No, it's going to be very closed off, for sure. Very limiting. And it's very much in the direction of a lot of the dystopian sort of novels and movies and things that they're really, they've got it pictured out pretty well as the technology allows. I mean, it's almost like they predicted it.
Followed. I can't believe it.
Yeah. You think maybe somebody had a plan in place there. And that's what's funny is because, yeah, somebody did and then somebody didn't. And these guys did and these guys participated in and these guys didn't. And things still worked out that way. I think it's a little bit of an understanding of the nature of humans and what they do. And we have this large portion of people with a big question mark on their head, these NPCs. And I hate to talk about it that way, but because they are stuck inside the matrix, the system, whatever you want to call it, they're completely clueless. I'm not saying that they don't have the capacity. I'm not saying that they aren't capable of at one point switching themselves on, freeing themselves from the system, whatever, with the right prodding, with the right information, the right reasoning to do so. But at this point, there's a whole bunch of NPCs out there with a big question mark on their face, and there's an interesting battle for their souls that is kind of dismissive of them because they are still that big question mark on their face. And so I find it to be an interesting time that we live in. I'm having a great time being who I am, but I always did. And that's why I always thought that there was something better about the ideology of a libertarianism or a limited conservatism, if we must talk within the confines of the system as it exists and give people that maybe that comfortable space where they can talk about something they understand, an organization, a government, an idea of people working towards something until they figure out that they could do these things themselves. I see a lot of hope, but at the same time, just like you were saying, with the technology, it's made it so much easier. And because we have so many of the people with the big question mark on their face out there, they could just fall in either direction at any given time, depending on what sort of input comes across their face or force or scare. You know, the whole COVID thing was a huge eye opener for a lot of people, but they're going to do it again. Did you learn anything from it?
Yeah, you talk about the NPCs, and I have evolved a bit. I used to think that you could change anybody's mind with the right impetus, but I've actually come around to that because, as you mentioned, a lot of these people especially with the indoctrination centers we have known as our school system, and a lot of people, myself included, I cannot afford to put my kid in private school or do homeschooling. I can't afford it in L.A. But when are those people programmed, and at what point is it set in? I remember reading, and I don't know if you saw this story, they did research, and they said something like, 40% of the population walks around with no inner monologue whatsoever.
Oh, God, yes. Oh.
That blew my mind. How? How is that possible? But I thought about it. Mm-hmm. If that's true, then I think that there's 40% of the population where unless you reach them at a very certain point in their evolution, you're probably never going to be able to reach them. Yeah. So then we have to think about how society is going to be shaped. And instead, again, leaning into being this force for entrepreneurship and an advancement in philosophy, getting the people that are actually going to be leading the way, trying to get the people that do have that monologue nonstop, getting the thinkers, getting the creatives, getting the dreamers on board becomes so much more important because those are the people that are going to be really leading society forward. And trying to reach the NPCs, well, but they ain't never going to happen, so there's no point in trying to waste time on it. Trying to be a little bit more laser focused, I think, is the correct way to go. And COVID, for sure, woke a lot of people up. A lot of the inner monologue having folk woke up during COVID. Even here in Los Angeles, I was talking to a lot of people who, their motto is never again. And these are super lefties.
Wow.
Never again. And they're even questioning the school system. I mean, the LA school system, the enrollment dropped something like, I think, 20%.
Yeah, so I saw something about
that. That's a real
white
pill for you right there.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. And the question is, can we carry it over? And I think we can, because I think that there's enough people like ourselves out there that have been in this position waiting for this break. And on top of it, something like a COVID, something so obvious, so much control, so much money. You can point at those people, and it's happening right now. It didn't happen last week. It didn't happen 20 years ago. It didn't happen over there in that place. It happened right here in everybody's backyard. So it's one of those once in a lifetime kind of things that the entrepreneurs, the people who are paying attention, those thinkers, man, would you? That is so crazy that the whole inner monologue thing has come back around again. Because did you just see this thing fairly recently?
It was, I think, a couple of months ago, but it just sticks in my mind when I think about anything, anything converting people's thinking. I just constantly think about that. And I'm like, a lot of people out there just, they're not sophisticated enough to understand it. And they're simply going to go with what was introduced in their brain is going to stick. And they don't have the capacity to actually think beyond that.
What they were toilet trained into thinking, that's how Dr. Dean Lloyd that I talk to every month would put it. It's that core understanding, that core training that it's so hard to break out of. And I apologize to everybody, but I didn't really, you kind of hinted at this earlier, I didn't really pack up a plan B when I started considering this freedom thing. It was freedom or bust. For me, it's a straight line. There's liberty, freedom, anarchism, whatever you want to call it, on this end. And then everything to the other side of that is just some level of tyranny.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's a core concept that I hope we can get more people to appreciate the level of control on an everyday basis that's exerted on people by the government, every interaction with the government. And I talked about this, one way to think about it is every interaction you have with the government, when you think about it, is painful.
Yeah.
It is, and I think this is by design. It is under threat all the time that if you don't comply, obviously jail, taking away your children, but there's no pleasant interaction. Even people that are within the welfare system, even people that are getting things from the government and quote-unquote benefiting from the government, is still a painful interaction at every point that always reeks of anxiety, because even if you're doing things you think are right, what if you mess up? What if you don't report it accurately? Well, they're coming for you. And they make the system so inefficient, so abusive, that it's constantly painful to deal with them. So I try to remember.
And that's
the
people
that
they're trying to help.
Right?
That's
yeah,
the
exactly.
scary thing. They're not trying to help most people. So the level of pain that you get in any interaction from government, it jumps. For if you're one of the people that's relying on government, it's painful enough. But then if it become an enemy or a target of government,
I mean, I try to remind you that, and I think it's a powerful way to convince people to acknowledge the level of impact and the level of authoritarianism and the level of pain. You say, think about when you go about your day tomorrow, think about how many times you feel pain that is caused by your state or your local or your national government and how often it interacts with your life, and you'll find it is all the time. And it's a powerful way to get people to think about it.
Oh, yeah. Even from something just as simple as paying your rent or your taxes or just getting into your car and driving to work and thinking, oh, did I bring my license? Is my tag expired? Is my blinker working? Is my brake lights working? Is some cop going to pull me over and ultimately end up shooting me because he's crazy. I'm whatever. I'm black. I'm wearing a rainbow, whatever excuse it is that they come up with to interact with you and to ultimately to rob you. That's what it comes down to. And if you can get them to catch this point that those interactions from government, when government isn't there strictly helping you, when you're not begging from it or whatever, taking what's yours from it that they've taken from you already. It's trying to take from you. It is finding ways to get in your door, to get in your wallet, to lock you in a cage, to make you pay for one of them to not go get a real job.
Yep, precisely right. And I really hope we have a phrase here. The old phrase "taxation is theft." It's fine and dandy, right? I think a better way to describe it now. Tying into that, how insidious they are, and not only how insidious they are, but what the money is being used for, far more than it is for doing good in the world, is to say taxation is death. Because so often, taxation does lead to death, whether it be the death of a family, because there's an ongoing push now to destroy the nuclear family, whether it is the death of a business, as you saw during lockdowns, or real-life death in our funding of all of these wars and the unreported wars that we're taking part in all over the world. I think we're in still 50 countries right now. Jeez. Taxation is death makes people think about it a little bit more clearly, I think, than theft. Because theft you can argue about. But the fact that taxation literally leads to death is something, it's inarguable. It's a fact that you cannot debate. And I think
it shouldn't be an acceptable one, because there are people that can justify, they can accept, a little bit of theft.
Yep.
But, yeah.
Exactly.
Brian, we're coming to the end of the show, but we're running out of time. Anything to plug or anything you need to let these people know real quick before we go?
Sure. Happily. Yeah, thank you for the opportunity. Yeah, you can listen to my show, Mean Age Daydream, every Wednesday on the Lions of Liberty Network. We have three shows in the network, a Monday show, Finding Freedom, my show Wednesday, Mean Age Daydream, and then we usually do a Friday show called Meme Wars, which is kind of a fun show. Otherwise, you can also find me, I do a comedy podcast called The Boring, B-O-H-R-I-N-G podcast, if you just want to hear some jokes with less political aspect to it. And otherwise, just follow us on Twitter, Lions of Liberty, or at Brian McWilliams. Thanks so much for having me.
Man, I appreciate you taking the time. It's been really great talking with you, and I hope we get to do it again soon. To the rest of you, show is over. We'll be back next week with Dr. Dean Lloyd. Until then, take care. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Tejibo Tea Club's original Pure Pouty Arco Super Tea helps build red corpuscles in the blood, which carry oxygen to our organs and cells. Our organs and cells need oxygen to regenerate themselves. The immune system needs oxygen to develop, and cancer dies in oxygen. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit drinksupertea.com. The first word is drink, spelled D-R-I-N-K, then the word super, then the word tea. The complete website is drinksupertea.com, or call us at 818-965-9113, Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-965-9113. DrinkSuperTea.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.